From the Opubco studios at Britain and Broadway, you're listening to a News OK podcast.
Hello and welcome to another entertainment podcast from NewsOK.com. We're talking about movies this week. I'm George Lang, and with me is noted intern Nathan Poppy, and we're going to talk about three movies that are coming out this Friday. Let's start off with Year One. Okay, this is the latest from the house that Apatow built. Okay, but Judd Apatow did not direct this thing.
What did he do for this one?
He put up the money.
Money is the most important part.
Apatow Films. You know, it's technically a Team Apatow production, but you wouldn't know it from the quality of this one. It was actually directed by Harold Ramis, kind of a legend in the sort of, you know, the frat comedy world.
He's brought us worked on Ghostbusters.
Absolutely.
He's worked on Groundhog Day.
Stripes, of course. Groundhog Day, and a classic by any measure, you know. But this one falls really short. This one is this one's about a couple of cavemen named Zed and O, played by Jack Black and Michael Cera. You know, two talents that I'm not going to pass up as far as movies go for the most part, but they aren't given a whole lot to do except be Jack Black and Michael Cera wearing animal skins.
How long does that stay funny?
That stays funny for about 10 minutes. Okay, you just keep hoping. You hope it's going to get better, and it just doesn't. That irony thing, you know, it's like, oh, it's you know, insecure little Michael Cera, you know, George Michael from Arrested Development, except he's got long hair and he looks like Beck. It doesn't work. Anyway, so these guys, Zed and O, they get drummed out of their tribe after Zed does something that the tribe does not allow under any circumstances. I'm not going to say what it is. And so he gets drummed out, and he and O go over this ridge, and suddenly they're in biblical times.
Does that make any sense whatsoever?
Well, it just depends on what your reading is of history, which I hope you're reading the correct one, and or even biblical history, you know, which doesn't necessarily correlate with geological history. But, you know, let's look at it this way. These guys are Cro-Magnon.
Sure.
Okay?
Cavemen,
you know, you know, so they're, you know, they're somewhat evolved from the Neanderthals, but we're talking about, you know, guys who lived 40,000 to about 15,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then all of a sudden they are, they're living in basically Adam and Eve land. Okay, so they run into Cain and Abel. You know, and then they skip far ahead into biblical history where they're dealing with Abraham and Isaac.
Okay.
And then, you know, which they didn't really live at the same time, but it's like these guys are just sort of like, you know, it's almost as if they're hurtling through history, but not really, because I mean they're just walking along and they keep running into these people who apparently all live at the same time.
All right. It seems like there's a little bit more of a high concept to this.
Oh, it's high concept, but it doesn't have any internal logic. I mean, let's go a little farther. You know, it culminates in them visiting, Sodom. Mm-hmm. Okay. So really, if you're to believe what's going on here. These guys have, Zed and O basically have lived about 15,000 years in this.
That's a little hard for me
to
believe.
Which is hard to believe even by biblical ages. You know, I mean, Methuselah topped out at 969, right?
Yeah, Yoda wasn't even 700 when he died.
No, I mean, come on. So anyway, I'll say this. You know, never mind the sort of lack of internal logic, but Zed and O, their contributions to comedy in Year One basically are poop and pee jokes. Okay, and I don't know. I guess I expect a little more because I like Apatow's poop and pee jokes for the most part, but they're evolved, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's actually some meaning behind, you know, behind the sort of you know, edgier fare that that Apatow has produced, yeah, and especially the stuff that he's directed.
Definitely, it has heart.
You know? There's heart and there's some brains behind it. There's some things that you can relate to. And this is just dumb stuff. And you know, my understanding about Year One is that it was supposed to be an R rating at one point,
mm-hmm.
and they watered it down. And so what you end up with is basically one of these weak star vehicle type comedies that have that are kind of on the way out, like Yes Men from last
Jim Carrey,
year, the
yeah.
Jim Carrey movie. You know, they're supposed to be these easy to digest, mass market kind of comedies, and as a result, what you end up with is fairly dumbed down. And in the era of real Apatow fare, you know, of the Knocked Up, or you know, 40-Year-Old Virgin, or the or Forgetting Sarah Marshall, for that matter. I mean, this thing doesn't really play anymore. And especially, you know, and I mean, I think that at this point we want our comedy to be a little bit tougher with us. And to me, there's just no commitment here.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, there's a ton of talent here. You've got, you know, Hank Azaria shows up, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, all of these people who are, you know, who are sort of our current favorites these days. But no dice. I mean, it seemed like when I watched this at the screening, and it was a packed screening, people were just kind of like they were trying to laugh.
They wanted
you know,
to.
You want to laugh. You want to laugh at it, and it just wasn't there.
All right. Should we keep our caveman jokes to those 30-second Geico commercials, and that's it?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. It didn't work as a series, and it just doesn't work as a movie either.
What do you give this, George?
I gave it 1.5 star, and that actually that's kind of on the top end. I mean, if I could have given it maybe 1.25. Order, but we don't do the 25 percenters. Now you've got another real winner this week, the Proposal, right?
Absolutely. We have another movie that's dealing with ages here.
Yeah, yeah, right. And it's another weak mass market thing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we got Sandra Bullock, who's actually born in 1964, and Ryan Reynolds, who's born in 1976, and
mm-hmm.
they're supposed to be romantic interests in this movie. And whenever it hits that decade long difference, you know, I'm a little queasy when I watch it.
Queasy? Is there any reference to her being sort of a cougar type in this?
Not at all.
Just supposed to be on the level. These two are peers. They're perfect matches.
Well, that's not really how it starts. See, Bullock, she's this icy, terrible, mean book editor, and she strikes fear into anybody that walks in her path and anyone that she towers over. And she's always wearing these 6-inch heels, so she's taller than most human beings, you know, hot dog stands, everybody.
So we're all homunculi next to Sandra Bullock.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And especially smaller on the food chain is her assistant, who's Ryan Reynolds, who is effortlessly playing the hunky, sarcastic role, like it's so natural by now that
right.
he's got it down in Van Wilder, and he's been milking it for ages.
Basically the hunky Chevy Chase routine.
Absolutely.
Right.
And all of a sudden, Bullock, who is Canadian, gets called down to the main office, and she's going to be deported because her visa is being denied.
Mm.
Some high concept right here.
Right.
And to solve her problem, she decides to fake her love with Mr. Ryan Reynolds. And they're going to have a quickie marriage, and that would fix all her deportation woes.
So it's green card.
Green card, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. Green
okay.
card comedy. Here we
right,
go.
Right.
And the film revolves around this sick charade of them pretending to be in love with each other. Now, Ryan Reynolds, he already knows everything about Sandra Bullock because mm-hmm. he's been kissing her butt for the past 3 years as her assistant, but she knows absolutely nothing about him. And so they have to try and convince the deportation services that they're actually in love, and they do this by going on a weekend trip to Alaska. Sitka, Alaska. And you know what it is they have this sappy, you know, love story is supposed to build upon this lie. And
why Sitka, Alaska?
I have no, because I don't know. It sounds very similar to sitcom, which is.
But I mean, what's there? Why are they there?
That is where Ryan Reynolds' family lives.
Oh, okay.
And they have to convince them that they're in love, and they have to announce their engagement there.
So she's trying to stay out of Canada by going to Alaska.
Absolutely, which is kind of odd because she couldn't get closer to Canada. And, you know, this isn't one where you're supposed to, you know, think too much about it. But,
clearly.
The movie knows what it is. It's this simple, sappy story that's really easy on the eyes.
And somehow they find true love, right?
Absolutely.
Aw.
They're forced to share this one kiss in the living room, and apparently that's where this fake kiss starts from that, and then it's more than just an act. You know, and it rolls on that, and Bullock, she can be on with her physical comedy and Miss Congeniality. I felt she was really clicking, but with this, it's really, really hit or miss. She's dancing around the screen, she falls all around... everywhere, and you know, it kind of wears thin quickly. You know?
Wow.
And there's Reynolds effortlessly spitting out his one-liners. You know, it's nothing too crazy. But the supporting cast in this, it's got some got a few interesting entries. Betty White from the Golden Girls. She plays a kooky grandma in this, and Craig T. Nelson from Coach is a disappointed dad, and Mary Steenburgen, who is in Step Brothers, she's got that loving mom rolled down.
Oh yeah, yeah, she's been rolling pretty well with those things. So yeah, absolutely. Betty White is the kooky grandma.
She's got that down. Golden Girls taught her so much. But, you know, the proposal, it's inviting. And it's because everybody's playing along with this ridiculous ploy and all these ridiculous situations. And it's passably entertaining. But, you know, it's kind of hard to care about what's happening to these characters when none of them truthfully care either.
Right, right. Yeah, it's kind of what I was expecting. But they've been promoting this thing for months now. I mean, they started rolling out trailers for this like, you know, late last year.
It seemed like it would be like the Lord of the Rings of romantic comedies or something, but that's definitely not the case. I'm going to give this 2 stars.
That the Lord of the Rings of romantic comedy. I don't want to see that. Okay, so the final movie that we're going to see that we're going to talk about is Easy Virtue. Now, that you know, this is definitely not on the expensive like comedy blockbuster end of things this week. This is actually an adaptation of a Noel Coward play from 1926, which has actually been made into a movie once before, but it was by Alfred Hitchcock in 1927, and it was a silent. Okay, which I don't know how you're supposed to get that witty dialogue that Noel Coward is known for in a silent film, but at any rate, so it's finally been remade by the director Stephen Elliott, who I think is probably best known for The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, which is quite a while back. He's only made a couple of films since then, neither of which were any great shakes. But this time out, Easy Virtue is a strange adaptation. I got to tell you. I mean, it's set at the time that Noel Coward's play was set, but he takes these sort of strange Baz Luhrmann style liberties they have these jazz age covers of like Car Wash by Rose Royce and Get Out of My Dreams, Get Into My Car by Billy Ocean. You know, Get Out of My Dreams, you know, that kind of stuff. It was just, it's really, really like off-putting.
They try to put that in a movie set in the 1920s.
That's right. So these anachronisms keep hitting you, and it does not work at all. But anyway, this stars, of all people, Jessica Biel, who gives a really great performance in this.
Really?
As Loretta, who is a beautiful American race car driver. She meets this British aristocrat named John Whittaker, who's played by Ben Barnes, who is in Prince Caspian, who then takes his new bride to meet the clan at their sprawling country house in England. It becomes sort of like a clash between the old world structure and the modern age. And John's mother, Veronica, is played by Kristen Scott Thomas. She's pure old world and a total snob. Already starts calling Loretta John's floozy before she even arrives there. You know, and then John's got these completely insufferable ninny sisters named Hilda and Marion, who are who basically join their mother in trying to just destroy this marriage, which is it's all very, very harsh, but they just can't stand this progressive American who's very much a modern woman and believes in work as opposed to living off of the estate and all of this. And so there's the father, Jim, who's played by Colin Firth. Basically sort of pads around in a daze because he's sort of shell-shocked by his experiences in World War I. But anyway, so throughout this whole thing, it's about them trying to ruin Veronica and the two sisters trying to ruin this marriage. It works pretty well as far as some of these performances. Like I said, Jessica Biel doesn't really, who I think has probably had a hard time trying to
get anything serious
yeah. going. I mean, she's had some decent roles out there, but I guess because of her beginnings on Seventh Heaven, and her sort of her sort of cheesecake persona, she's not really seen as being a serious actress. But I'll tell you this: when you've got her playing up against people like Kristen Scott Thomas and Colin Firth, she actually holds her own. In fact, she really does carry this movie, which is really surprising. I think there's actually an opportunity here for Biel to actually break through with these kind of roles. This particular movie isn't going to get a lot of attention. It's a pretty small film, and it's being given sort of an AMC Select release where it's only showing on one screen, probably for maybe 1-2 weeks
minute,
at best,
maybe
a minute, that kind of thing. So it's not going to it's not the kind of thing that is going to really win over audiences. But I think that probably casting directors are going to look at this and say, okay, I think that I think she might be able to handle the heavy stuff. So she does well, but I swear, when you hear, there's no place for Billy Ocean in anything, all right? not in your
what do they throw in the
not in your dreams, like... not in your car, not in the Caribbean. No, there's no Billy Ocean. When it shows up as this kind of like, Al Jolson kind of jazz age thing. It's
too much of a distraction.
It's too much of a distraction. It's like it seems like Stephen Elliott just doesn't have any discipline here. Somebody or there wasn't anybody around to tell him, don't do that. Stop doing that.
No one to wag the finger.
Exactly. So it always helps in these kind of productions to have somebody to come along and say, that's probably not a good idea. Let's keep the it's taking away from the actual from the action in the movie. So, Easy Virtue, it's showing at AMC Select. You can check it out if anything, just to see that Biel can actually act. There you go.
Okay.
So that's really all we've got this week. Year one, no. The Proposal, Easy Virtue, maybe. And you know, it's going to get better. There are things over the horizon.
Is there hope?
There is hope this summer. You know, but for now, just keep going back to see Star Trek.
Absolutely.
Okay, for Nathan Poppy, I am George Lang. Thanks for downloading us, and come back next week.